Welcome to the GPP edition of Rare Disease Advisors Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the generalized pustular psoriasis community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Our guest today is Dr. Arash Mostaghimi, an Associate Professor of Dermatology and a practicing physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're here to talk about generalized pustular psoriasis, which is a rare, chronic, and severe inflammatory skin disease. And we know that it is extremely rare, something to be between 1 in 7 cases per million. How did you come to specialize in this rare disease, and why is it important?
My background is in both internal medicine and in dermatology. I'm board certified in both. And much of my clinical practice is in running the inpatient dermatology service, which is a consultative service at Brigham Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. And there we see patients who are in the hospital with other conditions who happen to develop a dermatologic condition, but also many patients who are hospitalized with primary dermatology conditions. And as those of you who are familiar with dermatology know, there aren't that many cases that are true emergencies in dermatology. But this disease, GPP, generalized pustular psoriasis, is one of them. And although it's an uncommon disease, we have a large referral base. And having seen these patients several times over the past few years, it became an area of interest for me.
So you said it's one of the few conditions in dermatology which actually presents as an emergency. Why is that?
In GPP, you can think about this largely as an autoinflammatory disease in which the parts of your immune system that are upregulated inappropriately are the same parts of the immune system that you would have upregulated in the context of an infection. So often people with GPP are mischaracterized as having severe infection or sepsis, and their clinical presentation is similar. High spiking fevers, they can become hypotensive with low blood pressure, they can require cardiometabolic support, they may end up in an ICU. And unless you identify and recognize that this condition is in fact an inappropriate condition of inflammation, not a reaction to an infection, you can often end up on ineffective treatment with broad spectrum antibiotics and similar treatments, while the underlying cause, the primary inflammation, is underappreciated, undertreated.
So this results from a genetic mutation.
There are genetic mutations that are associated with this condition. There's a lot of genetic polymorphisms that are associated. But when you look at this clinically, there are patients who do have GPP that do not have a known genetic association.
So would it be environmental factors?
We don't completely know. It probably is still genetic factors, but it's not one or two specific genes. So there are one or two genes, the IL-36RN, CARD14 gene mutation that are specifically identified and associated with GPP. There are many patients with GPP who, in doing a genetic evaluation, we do not identify known genetic mutations or variations. And for these patients, there likely is a genetic cause in combination with an environmental cause, as you just suggested. But their story is probably not as clear at the moment.
Because the disease is so rare, we're talking, from what I understand, between 1 to 7 cases per million. How many people have this disease or have been diagnosed in the United States?
Oh, I don't know the exact numbers in the United States. It is probably a disease that is under-recognized and under-reported because it overlaps, as you can tell by the name, with psoriasis, which is a fairly common disease. So about 50% of patients with GPP will also have psoriasis. And often those patients are only identified as having psoriasis and may be responsive to treatments that we typically use for psoriasis, whereas others may be more resistant to those treatments and require specialized treatment. The prevalence is really driven a lot by how many Asians are in the population. In Asian communities, Japan, Korea, that's when you get to the 7 or 10 per million range. Countries like France, where there's some epidemiology, Denmark, is more the 0.5 to 1. So it really depends on what the combination of races are that are reflected in your population.
So, for example, among the Japanese, the disease is more common than in the U.S.
By an order of magnitude.
But it's still an extremely rare disease even there.
Yes.
I see. Okay, so I want to ask you, we mentioned geographical factors and environment, potential environmental triggers. And within GPP, there are subtypes of the disease, right?
There are subtypes. Getting back to the idea of the environmental factors or other factors that can trigger this, patients will report corticosteroid withdrawal. So if they're given systemic corticosteroids inappropriately, if those medications are taken away, they can flare and develop GPP. Another cause would be a viral trigger. So if you develop an infection with influenza, COVID, or an unknown virus, that can trigger it. Many patients will report simply stress, lack of sleep, other factors in their lives is also triggering this eruption.
Did COVID trigger any wave of this?
Both COVID and COVID vaccine have been associated with development of GPP, although it did not, you know, it did not lead to an epidemic of the condition. As you said, it's rare. But for many patients, that was the trigger for their presentation.
That's interesting. So both COVID and the vaccine that prevents COVID could, in some cases, trigger the disease?
I think anything that triggers your immune system, if you have a strong inflammatory reaction, whether that is a virus, whether that is stress, whether that is withdrawal of immunosuppressive agent, any of these things can push your body into that flare of GPP.
You, in your practice, you personally treat patients with the disease. They come to you.
Yes, both in the inpatient and outpatient settings.
Let's talk, if we could, about therapies. What's out there to either cure this disease or at least treat it and keep it under control?
So historically, the treatments for GPP were immunosuppressants. First, corticosteroids, and then other nonspecific immunosuppressants such as cyclosporin or methotrexate. With the development of biologic agents for GPP, for psoriasis rather, many of these were repurposed and used to treat GPP. So IL-17 inhibitors, IL-23 inhibitors have some role, and some patients can be effective. But for many patients, all of the medications I just mentioned are not sufficient to treat them quickly and to prevent them from developing the flares. Most recently, there's been the first FDA-approved medication for this drug called spesolamab. Spesolamab is an IL-36 inhibitor that really specifically targets the exact inflammatory pathways that are upregulated in this condition. It binds to the receptor and prevents its activation. And it's been shown to be effective both in patients that have known genetic predisposition, with known genetic mutations, and those that without a genetic mutation. And what's remarkable about this medication is that it is highly, highly effective. It's an infusional medication and really like a light switch. It turns off the disease, and often patients have improvement, within a day with regards to both the erythema, the redness of their skin, and the development of pustules. And hemodynamically, they also stabilize quite rapidly.
Is this the one that's sold under the brand name Spevigo?
Yes.
What about potential side effects?
Yeah, a lot of focus was placed on understanding the potential risks of infection because it is suppressing a particular part of the immune system that drives neutrophils, which are key in identifying and treating infections within the body as part of the key parts of the body's host defense. Despite this, the rate of infection was not elevated, and the overall safety, both in the short-term infusional data, but also data coming out of longer-term subcutaneous trials, has been positive. There are some injection site reactions, some occasional adverse events, but nothing material that has come out of those studies.
I see. And what about patient advocacy organizations? Is there anybody out there representing people with this extremely rare disease and speaking up for them and raising awareness?
There's an element of advocacy through the National Psoriasis Foundation. There are other rare disease agencies and institutions which include GPP within their ranks. There may be in some countries, maybe in the Asian countries, I'm not particularly familiar with a GPP-specific organization in the United States. It may exist.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
If you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
We've been speaking with Dr. Arash Mostaghimi, an associate professor of dermatology and a practicing physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. This is your host, Larry Luxner. Thank you for listening.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.